It is 92 degrees at 6:08. It feels steamy. I'm sorry, Jonathan Lowe. It was cool and crisp when I walked out this morning to get my bagels and go to my hair appointment.
There's nothing.
I know, but it got a lot warmer today.
This is something we call Kansas City, Wichita, Little Rock weather.
Lived in Memphis. Believe me, I know the heat. I can feel it.
Yeah, this is Memphis weather. That's all it is. Memphis summer.
This is what it's like in Memphis. I don't understand our ups and downs. It's like we've been up, we've been down, or we've been down, 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 then we go up, then we go down.
Earlier in the week we had a really cool couple of days, actually, coming in Thursday, Friday. It was fairly cool for this time of the year, but you're going to get that in summer in Minnesota. You're going to get fluctuations of temperature. We're not going to be 75 all the time. We're not going to be 95 all the time. We're going to go back and forth.
I feel like we've been fluctuating a lot.
It's typical. It's weather. Weather is fickle, as are the people that bring you the weather, like myself. Don't tell any meteorologist I said that. Because if they find out that I said that, I'll be banned from meteorology club for life.
It just feels like we've had a lot of extremes where it's been, it feels extremely warm out, and it is 6:10 in the evening. This morning was quite pleasant, but it was almost crisp. And then other days this week, it has been extremely crisp. I mean, like the jacket weather, the sweater, and then yikes.
There are some people that will look at that and maybe think it's more evidence of climate change. With respect to just the daily fluctuations of that, I won't go that far. There could be more differences than from normal. But again, average temperature is just what you've taken over a 30, 50, 100-year period. And, temperatures have averaged out to this. So this is what you can expect to be around. It's not necessarily we're going to hit that every day because the averages say so.
Well, overall, I would say that Minnesota summers hit the sweet spot of just having fabulous weather because it is comfortable. Occasionally it gets hot, but it is so lovely and so pleasant and so awesome. And I love our summers.
I've never been to this place, but I would advise San Diego. San Diego has perfect summer weather all year round.
That's boring.
No.
It's boring.
You can give me 75 seconds of on-air TV time. I'll be fine with that if I can go out and golf in the 75-degree weather.
Okay. All right. Listen, we have a great show lined up for you. Coming up in this half hour, we're going to talk about the outbreak of measles. I think a lot of people thought measles was over. The outbreak was just, it was something that from the 50s or 60s. Well, there is an outbreak, and it was concentrated in the Somali population. Now there are indications that it is spread to another individual. What we should know, a lot of people still, with all the information we have about vaccines, a lot of people still apparently reluctant, concerned about giving their babies, their infants, all the vaccines or the follow-ups. And I get it. When you have, a tiny little baby and they're so small and they're so precious, it does seem like it's a lot to give them those many injections. But this is a dangerous situation. This is potentially deadly. This is an illness that killed, many, many people back in the day. So we're going to talk to an expert about that. We're also going to talk in the second half hour, is retail dead? I mean, the latest store to go out, and I know this is a small store, and many of you may not know about it, but it's called Gymboree, and it's like a little kind of retail store for kids. And I used to enjoy going there, when my kids were little, when I could like make them wear whatever I wanted them to wear. And, I liked it, and it was reasonably priced, but it was kind of special and sort of dressy. A whole bunch of those stores have gone out of business, and it just seems like all of these retail stores are really suffering these days. And we're going to talk with an expert about that. We're also going to talk in our 7 o'clock hour with Stephen Scheer, who is a professor of political science, about the extraordinary developments of this week. And also at 7:35, really nice guy, super talented writer, Rick Nelson, who has probably the fantasy job for a lot of people. He's the Star Tribune restaurant critic, and he came out with the 6 best new restaurants so far this year. So we'll visit with him. So keep it right here. We're going to take a quick break. Esme Murphy, along with Jonathan Lowe, Keep it right here. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCC. It is 6:15 on a Saturday evening. Esme Murphy with you on a steamy Saturday night. Well, I don't know if you've seen the news about the measles outbreak, which was contained to the Somali American population. Now, perhaps there are indications that there is at least one case that is outside of that. Dr. Eric Barth is a pediatrician with Allina Health Ramsey and is joining us right now. Dr. Barth, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, yes. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Dr. Barth, let me ask you, what is your take on this outbreak of measles? And I know that there are still a lot of people out there who, when they have to get those shots for their those little tiny babies, they are concerned.
Of course, of course. And I understand that. I mean, I'll have to admit that as a parent myself, there's just a little bit of trepidation when my own kids got their shots when they were babies. Because there's nothing in this life that's 100%, right? Nothing that's 100% safe. But you have to trust that these things have been studied for decades now. And, many, many studies have proven the safety of the vaccines that we give. And so that's one thing that you have to kind of keep in mind.
In terms of the outbreak that's going on right here, what can you tell us about it, and how contagious is it? And isn't the measles vaccine one of those that you get, like the boosters?
Right. Well, actually, it's a two-dose series. You get the first dose usually at 12 to 15 months of age, and then a second dose traditionally around the age of kindergarten, although those two doses can actually be given as close as 1 month apart. So that's actually what we're doing right now. Because of the outbreak, is we're giving kids that first dose as early as we can after 12 months of age, and then we're offering that second one. Either they can come back in a month later, or when they come in perhaps for their 15-month checkup, we're going ahead and giving that second shot then to try and give them that extra protection. It's not strictly speaking a booster. What it's meant to do, that second dose, is actually a dose to catch the people that didn't respond to the first dose. So it's not technically speaking a booster, but that's what we're trying to do. And of course, the vast majority of the cases of measles that we've seen here in Minnesota have been in unimmunized people.
All right. And so you actually are changing the practices for all children to try, or to say at least, if you would like, instead of waiting until kindergarten, you can have, after that 15-month shot, you can have it a month or two later.
Correct. That's exactly right. We've changed our practice in response to this outbreak. So,
when did you change that?
It's probably maybe a week or two into the outbreak. It came out as a recommendation. So we've been doing it probably. We're actually starting to see the kids coming into the clinic now who actually maybe a couple of months ago got their measles vaccine, because the outbreak's been going on that long.
Okay. Well, I remember my mother telling me about children dying of measles, and that still happens, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. For the majority, measles is a benign childhood illness, but there are, you know, if you have enough kids getting it, so if nationwide everybody, children were expected to just get the measles as a rite of passage in childhood, a certain number of those kids would get encephalitis, which is a brain infection, or they might get pneumonia, and a certain small percentage of them might die. And so that's the why we emphasize the importance of immunizations, because again, it's yes, for the majority it can be a benign childhood illness, but for a few it winds up leading to hospitalizations and sometimes even deaths.
What do you suggest right now to parents of young children who have gotten? I mean, so the immunization happens at the 15-month checkup. Can you get it before your 15 months?
Oh. Yeah, 12 months is the earliest at which you can usually get it. Now, there are certain circumstances where a child younger than 12 months can get it. Like, let's say they're going to be traveling overseas to a part of the world where measles is endemic, meaning that there's a fair amount of measles out there. You can get it before 12 months of age, but that actually winds up being an extra dose. The first regular dose can be given at 12 months. The second dose can be given any time after a month later than that. And so, again, what we're seeing now is basically any child that comes in between 12 months and 5 years of age, if they haven't gotten their first dose, because maybe they're just 12 months or maybe they're 15 months and they haven't gotten their first dose, we're giving it. And if they come in after that, maybe for an 18-month check, and maybe they did get their first one, we're giving a second one. So we're trying to get those done. And it's not an extra. It's not an extra. It's just getting that second dose early.
All right. What, you know, and I guess I've always had an extremely good relationship with my children's doctor, who's I think is just fabulous. And I he recommends something, and I say yes. You know, I trust him completely. There are skeptics out there. What do you say to people who are doubters? And even amongst the skeptics on vaccines is none other than the president of the United States, President Donald Trump. What do you say to these people? Because every bit of evidence that I've ever read, I'm obviously not a physician, I'm just a mom, says that these vaccinations save people's lives.
Well, right. And it's difficult because a lot of times for people, it's an emotional thing. It's an emotional response. And what we're trying to do often in the doctor's office or when we're talking about it is we're sort of making it an academic exercise, and we're trying to talk to people about the studies and the facts and all that sort of thing. And you try to do that. So when somebody's in my office, I try to explain about all the studies that have been done that show the safety of vaccines and how vaccines are so much better than the diseases that we're trying to prevent. And you try to have that conversation, but it's difficult. It's really difficult. And I try to be as sympathetic as I can be, because I know for a lot of people it's an emotional thing. And as you started off saying, it's your little baby there that's right. That's awaiting the shot.
Yeah,
so it's really hard.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I've had little babies, but I do remember that. Let me ask you, we're chatting with Dr. Eric Barth. He's a pediatrician about Allina Health with Allina Health Ramsey Clinic about the small outbreak of measles that still is something of a concern to those who are public health experts. First of all, let me ask you, what exactly is measles?
So measles is a childhood virus. So it's a very common virus that is actually very contagious. You know, you can catch it just by being in the same room with someone who has measles. So it's quite contagious. And it causes a typical appearance where you can get a fever, but also red watery eyes, runny nose, coughing, respiratory symptoms, what I kind of refer to as a measly face, where you look at them and they look kind of miserable with the red watery eyes and the runny nose, and they look like they feel terrible. And then they get this fine spotty red rash all over.
Right. Now, isn't the vaccine, isn't it measles, mumps, and rubella?
That is correct. Right.
Okay.
That's actually, when we're talking, all the times that I've said the measles vaccine, you're right. I've been referring to the MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine.
Okay. Because, like, I'm really old, but I did have mumps as a child. And I was very small, but I remember, you know, and I don't know that it was broken down that way. But is this something that, is this something that most parents, you have to have the vaccine, all the three combo, right? You can't get it just isolated.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. Yeah, it's a combination now, yes.
Okay. In terms of these childhood diseases, how much success have these vaccines meant in terms of, like, overall childhood health?
My goodness. Yeah, it's been tremendous. And this is one of the things that I frequently talk to parents about, and about how as I've been around long enough that I remember as a residents. So I'm a pediatric resident. So I'm studying pediatrics, studying to become a pediatrician. And I remember when little babies would come into the ER with fevers, and we would have to do spinal taps on all of them.
Wow.
Because we were worried about a bacteria called the pneumococcus and another bacteria called the HIB bacteria, HIB bacteria. And nowadays, because of those vaccines, you don't have to worry about those anymore. And so it's totally changed the way you would approach a febrile infant in the ER, because because of those vaccines. And that's just one example. I mean, there, as we talked about earlier, the advent of the measles vaccine and the chickenpox vaccine have made it so that those diseases are much less common, and we don't see those rare cases where people were hospitalized or even died.
Right. And I remember I had the chicken pox, and I remember, like, actually my father had the chicken pox and was, as an adult, was extremely ill, and we all had it, but this was before I think the chicken pox vaccine existed. Is there an effort to make outreaches to different communities, ethnic communities, about why this is important? Because I think that's one of the gaps here that appears to be occurring in our community.
That's exactly right. Yes, yes. In this case, in this particular case, and there's a lot of groups out there, a lot of families, a lot of parents who have vaccine hesitancy, we call it, vaccine hesitancy. But in this particular case with the measles outbreak, it's primarily the Somali community. And there have been attempts to reach out to the Somali community on the part of the Minnesota Department of Health and local clinics and things to try and sort of educate and inform the public on the importance of getting these vaccines.
In terms of the vaccine, trajectory and the amount of vaccines, and because I feel like that they keep adding them. Overall, do you feel that most people are kind of, sticking with the program?
Oh, yes. And again, it comes down to that relationship with your pediatrician. I've been practicing here in Ramsey for 24 years, and so I have that advantage of having been here for a long time, and I have that relationship with my patients. In fact, I now have patients who are now parents and bringing in their children to see me, which is kind of fun. But it has to do with that that relationship. And so for my patients, I'm able to – they have that level of trust, and they're willing to take that leap of faith and go ahead and get the vaccines and that are recommended. Kind of like you said before, where most of my patients, if I recommend it, they say, okay, that's good enough for me. I'm going to get it done.
Right.
But one thing I'd like to point out, I know there's a lot of concern about the number of vaccines that are given. And that's true. There are a lot of pokes, unfortunately, for these little guys. But the thing that's important to realize is the actual number of antigens that we're putting into the bodies of the little children is less than it used to be, because they've become much more mutated when they make these vaccines.
Interesting.
So they've identified exactly what part of the bacteria or what part of the virus called an antigen. They've identified exactly what part is able to create the immune response that we want. And so the HIB vaccine, for instance, only has three or four, depending on the brand that you use, three or four different antigens in it, and that provides the immune response. In the old days, there was the old pertussis vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And the
whooping cough, right?
Right.
Right.
Cough.
Which I somehow I had that too.
Well, a lot of people did. But in the old days, that vaccine had something like 400 antigens in it. That vaccine alone. And now what we call the acellular pertussis vaccine, the newer pertussis vaccine has like four.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So if you look at the number of antigens that we're administering, because the shots have become so much more sophisticated, and then you look at the number of antigens that we're giving, we're actually giving fewer antigens now compared with what we used to, even though we're giving more pokes, which is unfortunate.
Right. Well, and you know, I mean, as I said, I'm older, and I remember talking, like, my mother, you know, talking about, like, the threat of polio, and, you know, children were kept inside, and, you know, so it is, these vaccines really have changed so much. But I know that a lot of people remain concerned, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of information or misinformation out there. So Dr. Eric Barth with Allina Health Ramsey Clinic, thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate your input this evening.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Dr. Eric Barth, great information. And again, it's something that obviously a lot of us, that some families are turning away from, but the evidence from all the experts like Dr. Barth and all the others are overwhelming. And one remains concerned that some of these childhood illnesses that killed so many children may, in fact, be making a comeback. And that's pretty scary stuff. All right, folks, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to give you a little weather. And then after that, and it's pretty steamy out, you may want to hear the forecast. And then we're going to talk with an expert about retail. What is happening with retail right now? Keep it right here. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 6:36 on a steamy Saturday evening, 92 degrees. Esme Murphy along with Jonathan Lowe here on WCCO Radio. Well, let me ask you this. Is retail dead? Got to ask you, the latest shoe to drop, it's a pretty small store, but if you're a mom and you kind of like to get your kids, when they were little, kind of cute outfits as I did, when they'd still wear what you wanted them to wear, you know, you'd go to Gymboree. Well, Gymboree, at least four Gymboree stores are the latest retail shops that are closing. They were in malls all around the Twin Cities. King Banian is the Dean of the School of Public Affairs at St. Cloud State University and is joining us right now. Thank you so much. And am I saying your last name correctly?
It's Banian, yes.
Banian, okay.
Good evening.
Yeah. Okay, good evening. My apologies. Let me ask you, what should we make of this? I mean, you know, you've got a nice mall up there in St. Cloud. I mean, how is that mall doing?
Well, I think that mall is doing fairly well, but it's going through significant changes, too. I mean, it's about 15% of employment in the St. Cloud area is retail, and a fair amount of that happens at the mall. And, you know, I think there's still people that want to shop at the mall, they shop at the little shopping centers around St. Cloud. But I wonder what's happening in terms of the amount of business we get on a weekend. It used to be said that the city of St. Cloud was 60,000 on weekdays, 200,000 on weekends because people came in to our shopping centers. I think that's that weekend number that's changing.
Really?
And yeah, I do. I think that that's where, you know, the Amazons and the Walmarts are able to make, anyone that knows how to deliver goods. You think about living, you know, 25 miles outside of St. Cloud. Now all of a sudden you got to get in the car and go into town for the day. And you also want to do some other things, and instead you can just click on your, can click your mouse, buy your stuff, and have it sent to your house, and you don't have to take the drive into town anymore. Well, so when you think about Gymboree, you mentioned, and you know, Radio Shack, and places like that. I think those are all being affected by how cheaply we're able now to transport things from place to place. The big thing that happened for Amazon Prime Day turned out to be that there's now Amazon Prime Air. They have their own airline to move goods to you that you want to be there within a day or two.
Right. Well, and, you know, it's interesting. It's like St. Cloud, when you think about it, okay, it's a wonderful community, and that's you've got that one sort of big mall. You've got, you know, some other, you know, side malls. Here in the Twin Cities, you obviously have a much bigger population with many malls, and it's a little startling when you go into one of these malls now, which I don't very often, and it's like they're empty. And I also wonder if it's sort of something that is sort of self-fulfilling. Like, for instance, I work downtown in downtown Minneapolis, and I got to tell you, I really enjoyed going to the Barnes & Noble that used to be in downtown Minneapolis because I like to buy books. So I really like going there. And I also like going to I'd occasionally go to the Macy's there to get some makeup or something for my kids. And now both of those are closed. So the book that I wanted, I ended up getting on my iPad a few days ago. And then the makeup, I guess I'll probably have to order online. Or if, you know, the dress style that I like, I'll have to kind of go online and look at it. But when these things sort of shut down, it drives you even more to the web.
True. And for you and me, and you're living in Minneapolis, you've had all kinds, you have options. I live in St. Cloud. We've got the malls, and those are fine. I mean, I think about though, you know, places in greater Minnesota where that shipment is actually a benefit to them. I think that's where some of this is happening. So, you know, go back 100 years ago, and the fact that rather than buy through the local packaged goods store, you went to a little place that you could get something by mail order, and that place is called Sears. Well, Sears is probably... it's on life support. It's not dead yet. It's certainly in trouble. And those places, you know, what we're seeing now, I actually think, well, we saw this kind of 100 years ago when all of a sudden we had mail order. It's the ability for us to get goods physically to people and virtually to people at cheaper and cheaper prices. And that gets us all a better deal. The customer feels better about this, but certainly in places like the Mall of America or Crossroads Mall here in St. Cloud, it's a lot worse.
Right. And you know, and the Mall of America still seems to be doing pretty well, and they have like an enormous diversity of stores. But even there, I've seen sort of some empty shelves. And also, I wonder, let me ask you about this. And we're chatting with King Banyan. He's the dean of the School of Public Affairs at St. Cloud State University. You know, back in the day, you know, before certain aspects of social media, especially the Snapchats and the Instagrams, kids wanted to go and kind of hang out at the mall. Well, now they can kind of hang out with each other virtually.
Yeah, they do. They when they talk about hanging out with each other, it seems like they're actually laying on their beds in their bedrooms with their phone or their tablet and you know, are in a chat mode with them. So you're right. I think the social aspect of malls has kind of gone away, and I guess maybe it's my age. I'm not a teenager. I agree with you that there's something lost in that sense of community. I remember the excitement of being in a Barnes & Noble when it first moved into the town I lived in Southern California, and just hanging around there and talking to other people about the book you were browsing at that moment. That's gone. And I'm not sure exactly what replaces that. It's maybe the recommendations on Amazon, but I don't know that really feels like the same thing.
Are there any retailers that are doing it right, like brick and mortar retailers that are doing it right, that are somehow breaking through this, or is it just very difficult?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's going to have to, it has to be done by size, and so you have to go to a Walmart before you see someone who's really kind of hanging in there. Walmart tried to fight Amazon Prime Day by cutting prices itself at the same time. Target tried to do it as well. I think it's going to be based on size. For a mom and pop store to continue to participate in the marketplace, it has to offer services, you know, something that's right, physical and something that's really personal that you just can't get through an internet connection.
Right.
It's going to be very hard to do.
Let me ask you this. And again, we're chatting with King Banyan. He's the Dean of School of Public Affairs at St. Cloud State University. One of the things, and my husband has a retail furniture store, and he's been talking about this for a long time, about the tax difference. And that,
yeah,
you know, if somebody, and it's called showroom shopping, I believe is the term. There are different terms for it. But is that sort of off the table, you know, that if somebody does not have, in other words, if somebody does not have a brick or mortar store in Minnesota and they sell online, they can still sell to somebody in Minnesota without paying the sales tax here. And for somebody who has a brick and mortar store, that's a huge disadvantage because they got to pay the sales tax. What is
true.
The status of that? And is that sort of dead, or is that, you know, been washed away?
Oh no, it's not dead at all. I mean, I think it's that question of the technical tax word is nexus. Do you have a connection to that between that seller and that person, that state? That is still very much alive. States have increasingly gotten aggressive in trying to establish what Nexus is so that they can tax internet sales. And indeed, I think, in fact, doing this from memory, but I believe Minnesota now can taxes all internet sales. But it's still a question.
Well, I think it might be limited to people who have a brick and mortar. Presence. So, in other words, like I guess a room and board who has got brick and mortar, they would pay it. But
I'll defer to your knowledge on that. I'm just going to say my thought is that that's still very much a live issue, something that you'll probably hear, and that has to be settled really on a federal level, since it's interstate commerce.
Right.
The way you eventually get this solved is for there to be a federal solution to it, either by legislation or by a court action that permits the taxation by states.
Is this, though, something that is just really a natural evolution? I mean, things change. There are cycles, and then you have situations like Amazon now is setting up, sort of distribution centers here. So they're hiring people. Is this economy just fundamentally changing, and will it come around?
Well, I mean, you have to remember, Esme, that when you look at Target or Walmart or Amazon or eBay or any of those, what they are at their base is a transportation system, a delivery system. You're buying that as much as you're buying the good itself. Can you get it to me for less than the other person? Because perhaps the cost of the good itself is the same in all places, but if I can get it to you for a dollar less than my competitor,
or more quickly.
Yeah, I can get it to you tomorrow rather than in 3 days.
Or this afternoon in an hour.
Yes. Imagine the idea of having a drone deliver your product at your door at 5 in the afternoon that you ordered at 11 in the morning that came to you from the Whole Foods outlet that Amazon just bought.
Right, and that's what happens to a Whole Food. Well, let me ask you about, because here's St. Cloud. It's a medium-sized city. A lot of people depend on St. Cloud. It is the center, yet it's close enough to come down here. Certainly, you can order things online. Do you hear from sort of like, is there any sort of coverage about the mom-and-pop stores in your area and what they are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're very concerned, and remember, those stores are the ones that have their names on the Little League teams.
Absolutely,
as you see, right? So if you live in St. Cloud, you want to support a St. Cloud business, and I actually personally try to shop at the St. Cloud business because I know those people. I get back to and so they're trying to appeal to me and get me to keep coming, and I get that, and they're going to do more of that and sort of appeal to that. I just don't know how putting your name on a Little League team's shirt in St. Cloud helps you make sales out in Albany or in Avon. It's because they're a different city. So I really wonder. I think the small shops actually might, in some sense, then do a little bit better than the regional malls. And particularly, what I worry about are the shopping centers, or what we call strip malls, right?
Right.
Those are the ones where I think to myself, okay, what's the model that keeps them sustained? And frankly, I don't know what that looks like. I think you put more services in there, things that don't compete with the internet, like a good burrito or a nail salon or something like that. And I think that's what you're seeing evolve into those malls, are places that give you services rather than things that sell goods.
All right. Because, even like a Target, Target really has taken hits. And I guess the latest numbers for the last quarter were good. But Target, this giant corporation, has taken all these hits as well, because they didn't put, in the front end, apparently, enough investment into, they made some terrible investments in Canada, but they also didn't invest in that online presence, quickly enough and have that online, infrastructure there. And then, the Walmart, is continued to like kind of move there. Does this remain like a huge problem for even the big guys?
Oh, it's going to be a big problem for the bigger firms. I mean, Best Buy was in huge trouble. Seems to have made some rally more recently. Target is another one that came to the party second or third, and that's really not a good place to be. So they're in catch-up mode. I think eventually they'll do all right simply because their size really gives them some advantages. But if you don't have the size of a Target or a Walmart, I think you're going to have them, or Costco. I think you have major, major issues going forward.
All right. Well, it's an interesting discussion because certainly a lot of people are facing, and anybody who's been to a mall recently, and I don't go very often, it's remarkable to see it because you go to some of these big malls, even like the Southdales, and all these stores are empty. And you know, I remember back, you know, 10, 15 years ago when they were just bustling, and it's not the case anymore. And you kind of wonder what the future is for these enormous centers.
The ones I think about, though, Esme, is actually somebody owns that building, right? Because that's not owned by the store, so they lease those. What's happening to the buildings that the owners of the mall buildings, who no longer have lessees taking space in the mall? I would think those are the folks that are really suffering the most, and there might be the canary in the coal mine to see what's happening.
All right. Well, King Banyan, the Dean of School of Public Affairs at St. Cloud State University, thank you so much for your time this Saturday evening.
You're most welcome. Have a good night.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. All right. An interesting discussion, and it is so different. I mean, it really, really is. I mean, when you go to some of these malls, I mean, the Mall of America obviously doing pretty well. Ridgedale seems to be doing pretty well. They've got still have some openings. But you go to some places like Southdale, which used to be kind of it, and it's just empty. Interesting discussion. All right, folks. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe. We are going to take a quick break. We have much more ahead coming up on this edition of Saturday Night with Esme. A lot to talk about, including, and I feel badly about this, in our 8 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about the trend towards cider making, and I wanted to kind of sandwich this in so that Jonathan could be part of this because he's like the cider fan and like talking to me about cider. And I think we started this when we did like a beer segment about like, you know, breweries and home breweries and you know, all the breweries around town. And Jonathan's like got the gluten thing going, and he's like cider, cider, cider. And it is enormous, and it's big, and it's growing, and people are really into it. So we're going to talk with a cider maker and owner of the Keepsake Cidery and vice president of the Minnesota Cider Guild, Jonathan. So I know you're going to be off, but you're just going to have to listen at 8:35, okay? All right. Keep it right here, folks. We got a lot more ahead. You are listening to News Radio 83. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. Still steamy out there, 92 degrees. Chatting with Jonathan Lowe in the break about a guest that we have coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, the vice president of the Minnesota Cider Guild. Jonathan is like the guy who's like, cider, cider. Yes, yay, cider.
I don't only drink cider.
I know.
I do drink other alcoholic beverages.
I think the discussion got started when we had, as I said before, somebody who was from a brewery on, which there are many, but there are also many cider makers.
Well, we had this discussion. The Homebrewers Convention was a couple of weeks ago.
You had on
someone that was talking about that and previewing it. And so we got into the discussion about ciders. And so it's another line that people have really started to get behind.
And embrace really, here, yes, in Minnesota with all our wonderful apples.
Yes.
We are the apple capital of the universe, I think, perhaps.
I wouldn't say that to Washington State.
But University of Minnesota and its apples are just the best, I think. Honey Crisp.
There are really good apples here, but again, I don't know if I'd say that.
I think we got Washington State takedown, takedown, takedown.
The main two colleges in Minnesota, of which there really aren't any, they don't play for a thing called the Apple Cup every year. Washington does.
Well, wait a minute. We have major universities here. I mean, Who plays for the Apple Cup?
But Washington, the University of Washington out of Seattle, and Washington State University out of Pullman.
Well, we can have our own Apple Cup, darn it all. The Honey Crisp Cup. All right. Anyway, a lot more ahead. You got to keep it here. Coming up, we're going to talk to Stephen Scheer, professor at Carleton College, about the latest involving Donald Trump Jr. Keep it right here. News Radio 830 WCCO.